Nice car, Shuko.
Thank you. I just wish it wasn't virtual.
Popping that illusion button straight away. So our sound designer created that. Good job. Thank you.
Oh, get out of the way. Do you think I've just done a little bit better now?
Very believable.
Hey, what was that?
What do you mean?
The restaurant we just passed. Isn't that a new restaurant?
Oh, that. No idea.
Well, my car definitely knows. Alexis, what was that restaurant?
You just drove past a new restaurant called Molina's. It's German cuisine. Do you want me to book a table?
Absolutely. 7 p.m. For two, Jeff?
I'm in.
From know-how to wow. The Bosch Global Podcast.
This option to get information about what you see at the side of the road that we just simulated, that's something that cars will soon come with. But what's really fascinating is that comfort functions like this originate in safety features. So let's start at the beginning. My name is Jeff. Welcome to our episode about sensors and cameras monitoring the interior of vehicles.
And I'm Shuko. So yeah, it all starts with technology that we've had in our cars for many years. Technology that watches me as a driver and makes sure I'm fit to drive.
Because, let's be honest, we're not always the best at judging our own capabilities. You might think that you can drive 5 hours without taking a break, when, in fact, you're already showing signs of drowsiness. I'm no exception, and neither is our guest today, Bosch product manager Tyler Varga.
I typically drive across the country multiple times, and country being the United States, per year. And so I've driven to Utah and between Utah and Michigan 5 times in the last 12 months. So it's been quite a bit.
So Jeff, I'll need a little bit of your help because I'm not that familiar with US geography. So let me map that. We're going from Utah to Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's say something like Salt Lake City to Detroit.
That'll work.
Okay, so we're talking about, and I'm sorry, I have to give this in kilometers, but we're talking about around 2,670 kilometers. I don't think I've ever driven this far before.
For our American colleagues, that is 2,280 miles, just so we're on the same page here.
Miles.
And yes, it does take a few days, that's for sure. And it's not always the best scenery on top of that.
When you look at a typical driver, they know best, and it's including myself, and people will say, like, I'm not distracted, I'm not drowsy.
Or so they think.
And so it can be helpful for our own safety and the safety of other road users that, in fact, you are drowsy and you should take a break.
Recently, I got a vehicle that has an indirect driver drowsiness and distraction system, and it kind of gives these different reminders that give some sort of indication. And rather or not, you know, I continue driving or not, it still provides an alert that then makes you more mindful. And that's what's really important for it, is that from my personal experience, having some sort of visual audio alert that makes me more mindful will almost reposition me to think differently, or to just be mindful. Oh, maybe my driving performance isn't the best, or maybe my driving performance could be improved, and that it has nudged me to maybe take a quick gas station stop and get something to eat or drink or something like that, and then continue on.
So can you explain how a car can actually detect how fit I am as a driver?
Tyler mentioned that. That it's an indirect system, and maybe another indirect sound. I'm not sure if it's getting picked up in the microphone. My dog is upset about some test sirens right now.
So anyway, sirening himself.
He's sirening himself, exactly. So anyway, it is an indirect system, and that usually works using a steering angle sensor. So the system monitors your steering, and from that, it tries to derive if you might be tired.
So let me get this straight. If I'm oversteering and then correcting myself, that could be a sign.
Or, on the other hand, if you're not steering enough. When coupled with the lane keeping assistant, it can also take into account how often you're leaving your lane without intending to do so.
So then a little coffee mug might light up in the dashboard telling me that it's time for a break.
Well, these are indirect systems, so it's a little less direct than that. They don't measure directly how tired you are. they're trying to derive how tired you are from the way you're steering.
The steering angle sensor is an indirect sensor. And so with that can come false positives. And so this indirect sensing can be enhanced by a direct sensor.
If you could measure drowsiness more directly, that would make the measurement more reliable.
How do you actually measure drowsiness? I mean, in essence, the car is not going to measure my brain waves, right?
Actually, no need for that. Because it's actually possible to determine how tired someone is just by looking at your face.
What do you mean my face now?
No, Shuko, no offense.
If you must know, I slept like a baby, so you must have misread something. I don't have
No circles under your eyes or anything like that. It's not just you. I meant the royal you.
Okay.
Everyone's face sends drowsiness signals, and they can actually be captured simply by a camera.
What the camera can do is actually directly measure the driver's, let's say, facial features to really understand if they are drowsy or not.
Does Tyler mean by facial features something like yawning?
Yes, yawning certainly is one way of determining that someone is tired. In engineering speak, this means that the algorithm detects mouth opening for an extended amount of time.
Okay, so in my case, for example, I'm obviously not tired. I just open my mouth for an extended amount of time.
And maybe you did, but the camera is also looking at your eyes.
It's trying to understand the state of the eyelid. So if you consider like resting eyes, when someone's tired, they often will squint their eyes for an extended period of time or blink very often. And so we're trying to figure out how, for example, fast the eyes are opening and closing or if they're closed for an extended period of time.
Which actually makes sense. This is indeed more direct than just measuring somebody's steering.
Especially when you combine the signals.
We can actually understand if someone has their mouth open for a bit of time and then correlate that with the eyelid closure to improve the signal to then determine, yes, indeed, this person is drowsy.
And perhaps correlate it with the steering angle as well to increase the level of certainty even more.
And you said this technology is already available in cars today.
That's correct.
Could you maybe tell me where I would find that camera?
I'll let Tyler answer that.
That's actually a really good question because in general, some people want to find the camera and some people don't want to find the camera, right? So typically, a lot of cameras are located like at the steering column or the A-pillar, for example. We also have some cameras positioned more in the middle of the vehicle, so like on the display or the mirror.
I think it's an important point. Do we want to see the camera all the time? Probably not. But should it be completely hidden, almost recording us like in secret? Also probably not.
Or maybe it should be as on a smartphone. You know the camera's there, you know where it sits, but you don't really think about it every time you look at your phone because it's kind of camouflaged in that black area.
Yeah, I don't really feel comfortable about a camera watching me as a driver, I have to admit, but I'm probably not the only one feeling this way, right?
Probably not, but for sure, no one is ever going to see those images. The system is there just to remind you to be a responsible driver. And there's actually a push globally to install systems like these and make them even more capable to increase road safety.
Specifically in Europe, we do see regulations and also consumer testing requirements that actually are promoting the installation or requiring the installation.
Here in the US as well, there are efforts to make such systems mandatory. And regulators, as well as the engineers at Bosch, are thinking about more ways to leverage these cameras. Because once they're in the car, you can do much more with them than just detecting drowsiness.
So I guess my face is giving away more information about my state than I maybe wanted to.
Once again, your eyes specifically. I don't think the police do this in Germany, where you live.
Where I live.
But here in the States, when they stop you, they might actually ask you to exit the car. And then they stand in front of you and they're moving a finger or a pen back and forth in front of your eyes.
They have the finger going back and forth and they ask you to follow their finger. What an officer is subjectively measuring is the smooth pursuit of that individual's eyes.
But in this case, we're actually trying to figure out if you're sober or not, right?
Precisely. They are looking for saccades.
So this time you're going to be able to do the research for me, but I have actually never heard this word in English. What is a saccade?
I'm so glad you asked because I had to look it up myself. A saccade is when your pupils almost jump from one position to the next. It's a rapid movement from right to left, as an example.
So I could probably compare it to somebody reading.
Or just looking around a room. The thing is, when you're intoxicated, that is, if you have alcohol in your system, your eyes have trouble following a movement smoothly, and instead they are jumping from one point to the next.
Meaning more saccades.
Yes, and it's important to note you don't have control over this.
To be honest, I think about it even in a sober state. I don't tend to think about how much I move my eyes. It kind of happens naturally.
And that's exactly why it's useful in detection. And it's another signal that a camera can pick up.
Believe it or not, the camera can actually track that as well, too. And then from there, we determine the velocity, we determine the count, also where the pupil is fixated on, and then we correlate that with the behavior.
So all that is to say, future cars might be able to help reduce drunk driving.
And I think that's amazing. So this is, again, a topic of invented for life, probably as well, because there are so many terrible crashes that I think could be avoided. And I mean, alcohol is only one drug that could impair a driver.
That's right. Tyler, what about other drugs?
We actually conducted a collaborative study focusing on alcohol detection. Reason being is because there's been more so a regulatory push in this direction, also consumer testing push. And so this is the direction we're going, but the potential to track other drugs is possible. So we are evaluating that as well, but it is believed that, you know, there are different involuntary behaviors associated with other drugs that also can be tracked, or in the case, maybe sudden sickness events. You know, in a lot of cases where someone may have a sudden sickness event where they would pass out, there are different behaviors that may be detected prior to that, or in the case that it is actually happening, at least understand that and then provide the signal if the vehicle is capable to execute a minimal risk maneuver, for example.
Which means the car could pull over to the side of the road and stop.
It sounds like there could be a lot more coming, though. A lot of functions that make roads safer just by having an eye on drivers and making sure they're doing okay.
Isn't it fascinating that there's so much that you can read from someone's face?
Very fascinating. And there are also things you as a human might be able to read from someone's face, and you're not even aware of it. Like, you meet a new person, and you instantly have a gut feeling about them.
Ah, something like, you know, I don't trust this guy, or I want to be friends with this person.
So I did read up a little bit on this, and do you think you can distinguish a fake smile from a real smile?
I certainly would like to think so, but I have a feeling you're about to tell me that I can't.
Let yourself be surprised. So I found this psychology professor, Keenan Sheldon, who published actually about this. And he has a nice portrait picture on his University of Missouri staff profile page. And on it, you know, he looks very friendly to me, but I couldn't really tell, is it a fake smile or a real one?
I'm pretty good at Duchenne smiles, actually. So it probably was a real Duchenne smile.
A Duchenne smile?
Jeff's getting a little bit nervous. So many French words.
He's testing my skills.
This was named after Guillaume Duchenne, a French physician in the 19th century.
A Duchenne smile is a smile that involves the entire face, especially the muscles around the eyes. And so they lift the eyes and the cheek. And so it's not just the mouth moving in a smile, it's the whole face smiling. And perceivers can tell that you're really feeling that positive emotion when you express a Duchenne smile.
So basically, it's really smiling with your eyes. And when somebody does that, it's probably real.
And it's not something that you can really do on purpose. You have to actually be feeling it. And then it's just a kind of symptom of that feeling.
Yeah, except he said...
Here we go.
Yeah, but he said... that he is good at it, and he did it on purpose for his profile picture.
True. And you'd also expect the actors can fake it, because otherwise you wouldn't really believe their emotions in films.
And it probably just has to do with being able to bring to mind something or some aspect of the situation that's really amusing to you. So you have to make yourself feel it at that moment. And so that's how you can fake it, is to get a real feeling that's not really about what the perceiver might think it's about.
See, Jeff, you've got tips for the next photos. But Keenan says the Duchenne smiles are universal. So all humans can produce them and read them, independent of what culture we grew up in, because they're older than the culture.
So this is a really important idea in evolutionary biology, that you might evolve the ability to signal in an honest way that can't be faked that you have certain attractive strengths as an animal.
So strengths that go beyond muscles and being able to dominate or, I don't know, build a nest.
I think we're talking more of social strength in this context.
Nest building is a social strength.
We think that the Duchenne smile evolved in part to give us a way to signal to each other that, hey, I'm here, you know, things are good, I'm genuine, this is authentic, I'm not trying to take advantage of you.
Okay, so dear listeners, I can see Shuko right now. Shuko, would you please smile at me? That's the fakest thing I've ever seen.
No, it's not. No, I don't agree. I'm always happy when I see you, Jeff.
All right, let's try again. Try and think of something genuinely amusing.
So maybe like me doing jumping jacks. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go to our previous episode, listeners. Okay, how's this?
Oh, that's wonderful. Such a difference. Thank you very much. And honestly, of course, you know that I love your smile.
Thank you.
If you think of somebody you know that's constantly having belly laughs, they just are really good humor, good spirits, you can see it in their face. So we said that frequent Duchenne smiles are honest signals of what we call chronic positive affect or positive emotion. And those are the people that you really kind of want to associate with. You want to marry them. You want them on your team. You want them as friends, because they're going to make you feel good, and it's not fake. They're feeling it, and they help you feel it.
They help you feel it, absolutely. I think I need a couple more Duchenne smilers in my life.
Yeah, me too. I think I could use a little bit more Duchenne smilers in my life. But anyways, returning back to technology, I wanted to know more from Keenan if those signals couldn't also be picked up by a camera and image recognition systems. It would help them read our emotions, right?
I don't see any reason why they couldn't, and I would be surprised if it wasn't already happening.
Well, it just might be happening in a Bosch research lab.
If you're in a higher level vehicle or leveraging a higher level of automation, let's say in this case, SAE level 4.
Dear listeners, for those of you who may not know, SAE refers to the Society of Automotive Engineers.
Maybe emotions become more important to then anticipate what the driver would like, or maybe anticipate what the driver is going to do next.
So he's saying automated cars should adjust to the emotional state of the driver or the person in the driver's seat because the car is doing the driving here?
Yeah, pretty much. Being able to see how people are feeling could make the experience of a self-driving car much more pleasant.
One of those examples are, let's say there's an SAE level 4 system and it's behaving a little bit aggressive, you know, more than the person would want. And they have the little, you know, I can't do it because we're on a podcast, but the frightened look in your face, if you will, where, you know, the eyes widen up a little bit and then the mouth goes, you know, closes, but kind of perches together. We can track that and we can indicate maybe that the virtual driving system needs to be toned down, if you will, you know, and maybe drive less aggressive.
A car reading and understanding my emotions. That really does sound like the future.
Doesn't it though?
Right. Yeah. It's. I would say definitely futuristic, but also definitely realistic if you consider what we can already do today and how we can, again, enhance the overall driving experience for the driver and occupants.
Let's talk a little more about that. Because so far, we've talked about a camera monitoring the driver. But actually, what Tyler and his co-workers make consists of more components than that.
Right. We promise this monitoring technology that's rooted in enhancing safety can also be used to increase comfort. So let's get to it.
You know, maybe let's get back into our virtual car and see what Tyler's system can do for us. Imagine sometime in the not so distant future, you and I go for some after-work drinks with some colleagues. We have a nice chat with our colleagues. The evening gets longer and longer. We're in a good mood. Everyone drank well, but not the two of us. We're still sober.
And I would say, sure, we can take my car, and I'm going to give you a ride home.
Sounds good. But then we get into the car, you on the driver's side, me on the passenger side, and it turns out your beer was in fact not alcohol-free. This is how it could sound if your car tells you you shouldn't drive. But it depends on the manufacturer how the warning appears. Anyway, that's what Tyler's technology reveals.
Then right away, the camera is able to detect, you know, within a certain duration that the driver is maybe had one too many drinks and is impaired.
So the car would basically tell me, no, Shuko, you know what? You absolutely should not drive.
Fortunately, I didn't feel like drinking. So we switched seats. And now I get to drive your fancy car.
Lucky you, because normally it wouldn't be that easy. So with that said, Jeff, get us home safely.
From there, as you can imagine, maybe someone who's had a little too much to drink is maybe a little chattier than they normally be. And so from there, the passenger is talking back and forth to the driver. And so the driver continues to look back at the passenger to have a normal conversation as you would in the vehicle.
At one point, I'm kind of looking at you for too long and I'm not having my eyes on the road for an extended amount of time.
And the first distraction warning is issued.
That means the camera system can also determine when you're not looking.
Yes, but this time, not just by looking at your eyes or your pupils, but also at your whole head.
The reason we do the head pose and the pupil direction is if you consider, it's actually considered owl in lizard. So in owl, eyes are fixated, it rotates its head back and forth. Whereas a lizard often rotates its eyes and has its head fixated. So if you consider someone driving and then maybe texting on a phone, their head position is actually facing forward, but their eyes are looking downwards. And so we can track both of those to, again, enhance the signal, and that generally would indicate if someone's distracted or able to perform the driving task.
Owl, woohoo, woohoo, and lizard.
Yes!
I'm not so sure I like the lizard, but so you pretend to be an owl by having your head facing forward, but then lizard-like direct your eyes towards your phone? That's a no-no.
Well, during our car ride, what could happen is my phone rings. So now I'm driving your car, and my phone isn't connected to your system. So I might want to do what you should not do, and I'm just going to go ahead and answer the phone. Hello?
Now we're going to shift from a driver monitoring camera to an occupant monitoring camera.
That's a second camera, watching not only the driver's face, but everyone's position inside the car.
And so when you consider like a phone call, typically when someone takes a phone call, they lift the phone, they put it by their ear. Right there, automatically, we're detecting the bend of the arm, but also we can see the object in the hand. And so those two things can help us determine the behavior, in this case, a phone call, to understand, again, that the driver is distracted, but also more importantly, that the driver can't grab the wheel with their right hand.
That's important because you've been using my car's highway assist function. And with that, you're actually allowed to take your hands off the wheel, but you must be able to grab it with both hands at any time in case of emergency.
My bad. I pass the phone back to you. I'll be a responsible driver, focusing on the driving task. And you, on the other hand, seem to be very comfortable in the passenger seat.
Yes, I have my feet on the dashboard, and I'm probably being the DJ in the car and just chilling.
It's your dashboard.
If someone's sitting in the seat and has like their legs up on the dashboard, for example, or maybe is in an unfavorable position, we can also provide that data or information to the passive safety system to then enhance overall safety, maybe not deploying that airbag facing forward or even providing alerts to take your feet off the dashboard.
If something were to happen, that airbag would hurt you much more in that position than it would protect you. So the system can automatically switch it off. That said, to make those kinds of decisions, it's important for the car to know where passengers are in the first place. I might place a bag on the seat, and that should have different consequences from a person sitting there. And that's why, in addition to the driver monitoring camera and the occupant monitoring camera. The system can also include a radar sensor.
It's a 60 gigahertz radar that's positioned in the interior vehicle, and it behaves a lot like an exterior radar, but rather than detecting vehicles, it's detecting people.
Radar, that's unexpected. Why is a radar better at detecting people than a camera?
Because of occlusions.
Obviously.
Cameras can't see behind things, like seats, for example. But a radar signal can go straight through the seat, so it can even detect someone in the third row of a van.
Sounds almost like X-ray, but without dangerous radiation. But what does a radar actually see? It measures distances, right?
It does. But imagine radar waves bouncing off of your chest. The distance will slightly vary because you're breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Your chest is moving up and down, in and out, and radar can actually measure that.
And thereby determining that I'm a living human being.
And that you're an adult. That is to say, it can differentiate between adults and children.
When people exit the vehicle, one unfortunate situation that happens in all regions all over the world is they will leave their child behind. Say they forget the child in different situations. And so since the radar is capable of detecting the overall breathing rate of adults, we can also detect the breathing rate of a child, which is typically a lot higher than an adult, you know, 25 or up. So if the radar distinguishes or understands that there's still, you know, sign of life, and in the case it's a child, we can also issue alerts to help prevent children from getting left in a vehicle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's really important technology.
Mm-hmm.
I actually looked it up. Here in the U.S. alone, over the past 25 years, more than 950 children have died from heat stroke after they were left behind in a car.
That's shocking.
It is shocking. So child left behind functionalities such as this are on their way to becoming mandatory in new cars.
That's really good to hear. Okay, shall we drive this episode home?
I think that's a great idea. For the final stretch, let's get back into our virtual car and explore one more feature that ties all of these technologies together.
And I'll be good. I'll take my feet off of your virtual dashboard this time.
I still think it's your virtual dashboard, but I appreciate it. And we're going back to that restaurant that we drove past at the very top of the episode. Let's see what was going on there. So we're driving through the city, familiar streets, familiar buildings, but then...
Hey, what's that? Never seen this restaurant before.
Hey, Alexis, what's that restaurant?
You just drove past a new restaurant called Molina's. It's German cuisine. Do you want me to book a table?
That's a pretty smart voice assistant. You didn't give it any specifics of what you're inquiring about.
All the information the camera and the radar and the other systems in the car collect are merged to figure out what exactly it is that we're looking at and then provide information about it.
We do have the eye gaze tracking, GPS position and heading, and then this is all processed via the processing manager alongside our speech recognition engine. But then on top of that, what we're doing is leveraging cloud processing related to the application alongside interest intent and then also map data in POI.
POI as in point of interest.
Right. That data is coming from an external source. So everything we've heard so far was relying on Bosch technology, our hardware, our software, the cameras, the radar, and the steering angle sensor, the compute platform, and of course, the algorithms. Now, with this feature, we're making use of connectivity and bringing Bosch's partner, Amazon.
AWS, in this case, is providing in the background is information on the map and the point of interest to help give back to the driver or occupants.
That's cool. Just from looking at me, the car knows what I want. And I think it's double cool because, let's be honest, nobody gets excited for safety features. And yes, it makes sense that a car can detect an intoxicated or distracted or tired driver. But do I care if my car has that feature?
You personally? Probably not.
If the same system also increases convenience, that gets me excited. I want it for the convenience, and I get safety as a bonus, even though it was developed to enhance safety in the first place.
I think the safety features are cool also, because I believe it. This system actually does know better. I might think that I'm not too tired to keep going, but when I get that drowsiness alert, I better take a break and grab that coffee. There it is. Fortunately, just as we're pulling into the driveway. Thanks for coming on this ride with me, Shuko.
It's me that needs to thank you because you've been driving, but you can definitely give me back the car keys now.
Yes, ma'am.
Merci.
Listeners, don't forget to give us a like if you learned something.
And until next time, à la prochaine.
From know-how to wow. The Bosch Global Podcast.
Dear listeners, I'm Jeff's voice avatar, and I'll be hosting the next deep dive. Tyler will be our guest again. He will reveal more features about the interior camera system. And he will talk about implementation challenges like sunglasses, which could obstruct a driver's eyes.